Are you new to investing and have savings you need to protect? Right now, with the Middle East war, the Ukraine war, and maybe Taiwan soon, if you need a playbook, Noble Gold says allocate gold now and avoid the frenzied panic of the unprepared. When fear reigns, gold protects. And right now, get a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin when you open an IRA with Noble Gold Investments today. Shield your savings with Noble Gold Investments. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com. Hey, everybody. Fan of the Charlie Kirk Show. Alan Dershowitz joins the program to talk about his new book, Free Speech, Harvard, Safe Spaces, and More. And Joe Mitchell, founder of Run Gen Z and formerly on the RNC Youth Committee. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Support our program at charliekirk.com/support and become a member and come to amfest.com this Saturday, Phoenix Convention Center, December 16, 17, 18, 19. Tucker Carlson, Patrick Bett, David, Candace Owens, Glenn Beck, Rob Schneider, Roseanne Barr, Tulsi Gabbard, Ted Cruz, Dennis Prager, Ali B. Stuckey, Jonathan Isaac, Tim Pool, who will be doing his show live, James O'Keefe, Riley Gaines, Ben Carson, Michael Anton, Jason Whitlock, Gad Saad, Brandon Tatum, Seth Dillon, Jack Posobiec, Benny Johnson, Yanmi Park, Michael Seifert, James Lindsay, Christian Collins, John Amanchukwu, John Benzinger, Rob McCoy, Len Munsell, Eric Metaxas, Calvin Robinson, and for Turning Point Action, we have Vivek Ramaswamy, Steve Bannon, Kerry Lake, Donald Trump Jr., Kimberly Guilfoyle, Josh Hawley, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, Corey Mills, Mike Lindell, and Alina Hava, and our concerts, Big and Rich, Low Cash, and Raylan. Amfest.com, promo code Charlie for a special discount. Promo code Charlie, amfest.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is Joe Mitchell, founder of Run Gen Z and formerly on the RNC Youth Committee. Made some big news yesterday. Fox News says RNC Youth Committee members resign over dissatisfaction with efforts to attract younger voters. Joe, welcome to the program. Joe, we've known each other for a while. You do great work. Tell us all about this.
Charlie, good to be here with you. Well, frankly, it's kind of sad that I have to be here talking about this because I had a little hope in the beginning that this youth advisory committee was going to be something worthwhile. And I was warned by several people that might not be. And that's exactly what it turned out to be. You know, I was contacted back in March, by the political director at the RNC to join this youth advisory council that they were putting together to reach the youth vote and try to perform better than we have in these past elections, primarily the midterm elections that we did very poorly in. And so I was happy to join, wanted to, make sure that I was, doing my part in the movement. And I'm involved in, with you guys, of course, but, decided to do my part to help and was asked to also recruit other state reps that I knew to join this board. And we joined this board, and unfortunately, it's turned out to really be an optical illusion to be able to raise funds from donors to give to the RNC, which, as you've seen this past week, they are not doing too well on fundraising. And so that, I guess, makes sense. But this was not something I was going to continue to participate in and make sure that they could utilize folks that are good people that are actually elected officials that are doing stuff in their respective states to raise funds for this movement.
Yeah. So just kind of educate our audience on this. What is the culture like in the RNC versus, you don't have to say Turning Point, but five of you guys stepped down. Do you get the sense that the culture at the RNC is one to win or kind of more just kind of shuffle paper around, bring in money, pay some salaries? Do you get the sense of urgency from the Republican National Committee?
Well, I'll let the viewers decide that. I was contacted in March. I had one meeting I attended in March through Zoom. And in May was the next scheduled meeting, which my link did not work to even join that committee meeting and asked several times to get a new Zoom link sent to me, which, you know, shouldn't be too hard, and wasn't able to join that committee meeting because of those technical difficulties on their side. When I talked to other friends of mine that are also members that have resigned from this committee now, it was more like a brainstorming session where there was no strategic goals that were set out or timelines that were put in place, which is unfortunate. And since then, I have not been sent any meeting notices, and of course will not be in the future. But, you know, when I do stuff with other groups, and I will use Turning Point, you know, for reference, you know, when you guys tell me there's a timeline to get things in or to do things or, you know, dates for conferences, that sort of thing, you guys follow through on things. And so, you know, obviously if this is happening with this, you know, subcommittee at the RNC, I don't think that it's a coincidence. I think it's, you know, probably rule and not the exception, unfortunately. And that what's, you know, really made me upset and took the initiative to contact the other members that I had recruited through our circle to ask if they wanted to, you know, resign from this committee.
So there's five of you that resigned. What is the consensus then amongst you five? And what do you think materially can be done, or what the RNC could have done besides just having these stupid Zoom call meetings, where like actual action that you would recommend, because you are a very young lawmaker from Iowa, you got elected, have a really great thing. What can be done that they ignored or they were too bureaucratic that to actually do?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, I was twisting arms to get my other members to actually join this because they don't have a very good view of the RNC. And so they're doing that a favor for me, essentially, when they first initially joined. They're very busy people. They're state lawmakers in their respective states, the youngest state lawmakers. And I think the most disappointing part of this is that I had the, you know, the youngest female state reps from Florida, Texas, and Missouri. And I had Caleb Hanna from West Virginia, who's going to be the youngest statewide elected official in the country.
Wow.
And these people are, there are folks that have actually won elections, right? Like they've been through the fire. They've, you know, they don't have 10,000 followers on Twitter. They've gotten tens of thousands of votes in their respective districts. And so you would think those are the folks that you would want to point out to help actually lead this committee, be spokespeople for that. But they were choosing 17, 18 year olds that, in my opinion, it was probably either their parents' or grandparents' money that really got them on to that committee, and not the people that have actually been in the trenches, knocked on doors, worked with the grassroots to make sure to actually turn people out for their own elections. And so that's what made me, you know, really disappointed and discouraged overall, you know, with this, is that we had some folks that had incredible knowledge on actually how to turn out vote from somebody that's actually a youth elected official, and they didn't utilize that. And so that's where, you know, we're going to spend our time with groups like yourself that do have a clear plan in place to be able to, you know, not only win the next election, but also engage those youth voters that we need.
That's a smart point you made, Joe. So I want you to dive deeper into that. That, look, these are folks that have actually won elections in Gen Z. They're like 25, 23, 24, 25, maybe even younger. They've done the tough work. And it's not just all about, you know, again, social media chatter. And it's a bad trend, right? I want to be clear. I'm all for social media. We have a great following. Praise God. But that wasn't the case at the beginning, right? It was years and years of where we were doing tough work, knocking on doors, trying to make a name for ourselves. You know what it's like. You cut your teeth, 100,000 doors in the suburbs of Chicago. And I'm afraid that there's some of these young, and I say this all the time to our Turning Point kids, like there's too much glitz and glam with the TikTok and the Instagram thing. You got to get out in the streets and actually earn votes. So contrast that even further. There was this group, the five people that resigned, they're winners. They won election. They don't just get retweets. Talk more about that.
Yeah, so that's where it was coming from. Is if you look at the 16-member board, which if you guys ever created something like this, don't have 16 members because it's just too many people, and it, that creates it, you know, makes it bureaucratic. You know, but they had 16 members on this thing, and a third of us were actually folks that had been elected or currently elected, and that means that these folks had went out, they formed coalitions with grassroots folks, you know, with people like Turning Point USA, with, you know, Moms for America, you know, these different groups that they've worked with. They've went out, they've knocked on doors, they've talked to voters about what those issues are, but they've also worked with other young people that have helped them with their race and know how to get the turnout on you know, college campuses, for instance, and how to work with these other youth groups to be able to get that turnout out. So that was the thing, is my folks were frustrated. They weren't asked to have a bigger role and actually put out metrics and goals to be able to lead this council. And they relied on, you know, these people that literally one of them 17 years old, God bless him. You know, Charlie, me and you were involved in this at 17 as well, but, you know, haven't actually done anything of substance, and they're the spokesperson for this. You know, I went to several different RNC donor meetings, and, you know, I was messaging Tyler about this at the time. I was like, they're having these donor meetings and they're not going to ask one single elected official from the committee to actually come and speak at the donor meetings, like the people with credentials. Like it was baffling to me. You know, the approach they had, you know, towards this, and the lack of, you know, really the mismanagement of relationships from that side of things as well, to not want to have the people that actually have the knowledge on how to win elections, that would be speaking to your donors, that would be actually participating and be the spokespeople for this, you know, youth advisory council.
Look, it's not as surprising. And I'm all for kids getting involved, 14, 15, 16. And I know who you're talking about. These are good kids, right? And they're involved in all this. Mm-hmm. But you got to do grassroots work first. That's what I'm going to say. You got to do grassroots work first. You have to be a door knocker, precinct committeeman. That's where I cut my teeth. I cut my teeth when I was 14 years old, knocking on doors for Congressman Mark Kirk, for Congressman Bob Dold. You can go, I mean, you can go to Bob Dold, Dold with a D, not an E. Like, remember Charlie Kirk, the intern, right? 100,000 doors, right? Tons of phone calls. Anyone in Chicago would tell you. And I you learn a lot. You want to, and by the way, you have to start that way. And praise God, I didn't start on TikTok or Twitter or all this nonsense, right? You build up from the grassroots. I think it's important. Again, I don't want to ever bemoan, you know, a 17-year-old getting involved. God bless some great kids. I know some of them. But I'm going to say, yeah, guys, for every time you do a tweet, you should knock on 10 doors, and then you can get, like, you got to work yourself up. I'm all for kids getting involved. Praise God. That's fine. I don't want to punch down on them, but you got to do the grassroots work first. The world is in flames, and Bidenomics is a complete and total disaster, but it won't ruin my day. That's because I start my day with a hot America First cup of blackout coffee. Now, I've been trying to trim how much coffee I have, but when I have coffee, it's blackout coffee. This coffee is 100% America and 0% grift. Blackout Coffee is 100% committed to conservative values, from sourcing the beans to the roasting process, customer support, and shipping. They embody true American values and accept no compromise on taste or quality. By the way, I was traveling recently, and somebody brought me a cup of coffee, and it tasted really bad. It was really bad. I said, "Where's my blackout?" And they said, "We didn't bring the blackout on this trip." And I was really disappointed. It was a tough day. When you get used to Blackout Coffee, you know what I mean. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Use coupon code Charlie for 20% off your first order. By the way, it's kind of coffee season, isn't it? Gets dark around like 3:30. It's cloudy. It's not exactly the most uplifting weather. You kind of need to pick me up sometimes around 2 p.m. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Be awake, not woke. That is blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Promo code Charlie. The taste is amazing. It is smooth. And people know that I need my cup of coffee in the morning. Not too much, not over the top. But if it's not blackout, then the mood is not so good. Go south. Go to blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Great company. Blackoutcoffee.com/Charlie. Promo code Charlie. Joe Mitchell continues us. Sorry, Joe, I cut you off. Finish your thought there.
No, no worries. You know, I will say this last thing again, you know, about, you know, if you're 17 years old, you're 16, 15, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be involved with what you do. You should absolutely be involved. That was a leadership thing from Rana, where she should have known, okay, we're going to put the co-chairs as people that, you know, have more of these credentials. So that was kind of my last thought on the last segment. But absolutely, Charlie, we need people to start as young as possible. We want them to be involved on these boards. It's just, you know, you know from experience that she does not know how to pick the right leaders to lead these initiatives and how to work with the right folks.
No, and look, and this is in this article, this Fox News article, they attack Turning Point by name. The RNC attacks Turning Point by name, yeah, instead of defending their record. And this is, we're used to this, right? So I just want everyone in the audience to know this, is that when people send money to the RNC, they are spending their time, their energy, and their attention on attacking grassroots groups, Turning Point USA, Turning Point Action. And by the way, I think you're coming this weekend, right, Joe, to AmFest. We're going to have 12,000 people.
Correct.
That's what
yep.
the RNC is attacking. The RNC is attacking the thousands of students that were scholarshiping to have a life-changing weekend. They're attacking the pastors that were gathering. They're attacking Blexit. The RNC's attacking Turning Point Academy. That's what they're focused on. And yes, we fight back because we play to win, and we're going to finish the fight, okay? We're not just going to roll over like Mitt Romney, you know, Rana's uncle, and just say, oh, you know, she's got to resign. So Joe, just final thing here, Gen Z, really important. Let's just take the RNC out of the picture.
Yeah.
Okay, what needs to be done, you know, technically and a messaging standpoint to win over younger voters and also get younger people in elected office? And then also just riff on your story. You were one of the youngest elected people in the country in Iowa. You actually won elections. You didn't just send out tweets. In fact, you won more elections than Rana. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so, you know, Charlie, I ran for the state house when I was 20 years old. That's when I officially filed, to run for the House of Representatives here in Iowa. And, you know, I was a junior in college at the time, had worked, in several different capacities and internships at the Capitol. But, you know, my state representative of 24 years had decided to retire. You know, I had to make a decision, you know, was this my time to run or not? And ultimately it came down to there's never a perfect time to run for office. And I threw my hat in the ring and, you know, I knocked on thousands of doors across my district. I had a four-way primary, incredibly tough primary, and I won by 100 votes in June of 2018, went on to the general election in November of 2018 and won against my Democrat opponent, graduated college the next month and got sworn in to the Iowa House the following month as the youngest member ever. And really what I learned from that is that if you go out, you do the hard work and you work with the grassroots advocates and supporters, you know, in your county, in your district, they will help you. And they will show up for you to vote if you show up for them. And so that's exactly where I took with my story. And we created Run Gen Z, which is the organization I founded back in 2020 to help empower, recruit, and mentor the next generation of conservative leaders across this country to run for office. Because I believe if we have young conservatives that are elected to office with a platform, we can reach more young voters. And we have to prop these folks up. And that's exactly who is on this youth advisory committee I had. Caroline Harris, the youngest female ever elected as a Republican to the Texas state legislature. Maisie Boyd, the youngest female legislator in Missouri. Caleb Hanna, the youngest African-American ever elected to a state office in American history. These are the kind of folks that we're getting elected that are standing up for the truth. They're standing up for America First policies. And we have to make sure that more people are running for office, running for precinct committee men and committee women. They're running for the RNC committee woman and committee man spots, but also running for elected office on the local level, on the state level, and the federal level. And that's what we're here to do. And so folks can go to our website at rungenz.com if they're interested in running for office or supporting us. But we work hand in hand with you guys, Charlie, and you know that.
We love it. We're all in. And Joe, we want to help you grow. You're going to be at AmFest. If anyone's coming to AmFest, come say hi to Joe. Run Gen Z, 100% behind it. It's grassroots. It's metric-driven. By the ages of the people who resigned from this RNC council, 24, 25, 30, 26, 28, office holders. I mean, by the way, if the RNC is turning off people like you, this is multi-generational. I hope all of you that are mad at the RNC, you see that we're doing our part to hold them accountable too. Joe, we're out of time. God bless you, man. Thank you.
Hey, Charlie, thank you. See you this weekend.
Tucker Carlson last evening said the following, quote, "The RNC is like NATO. It has no reason for being. It only consumes resources, says annoying things, and breaks things." Tucker Carlson, everybody. MyPillow is excited to bring you their biggest bedding sale ever and just in time for Christmas. For a limited time, get the Giza Dream Bed Sheets for as low as $29.98, a set of pillowcases for just $9.98, and rejuvenate your bed with MyPillow mattress topper for as low as $99.99. They also have blankets in variety of sizes and colors and styles. They even have blankets for your pets. Get duvets, quilts, down comforters, body pillows, bolster pillows, and so much more. All the biggest discounts of the year are happening now. They're extending their money-back guarantee for Christmas until March 1st, 2024, making them the perfect gift for your friends and your family and everyone you know. So go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Kirk or call 1-800-875-0425. Get big discounts on all MyPillow bedding products, including the Giza Dream Sheets, for as low as $29.98. And get all your shopping done now while quantities last. It's MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. Joining us now is Professor Dershowitz. Always a treat. Professor, congratulations on yet another new book. I know today is the publication date. Tell our audience all about it.
Well, it's a book I started writing on October 7th, as soon as I heard about the disaster. And I finished it in 32 days, and it may break the Guinness Book of Records for the fastest book ever published, but it deals with everything that has gone on. It deals with October 6th, why there wasn't sufficient preparation, intelligence, obviously the events of the 7th, but more importantly, the events of the 8th, when radical hard leftists started to attack Israel. Even before Israel sent a single soldier into Gaza, they were attacked. The rapes were blamed on Israel. The National Lawyers Guild said, hey, what Hamas did was military and it was fine and it was great, and they applauded it. Women's groups remain totally silent about rapes. Me too, but not including it if you're a Jew. And so the book covers all of these, and it's readable, and you can get it on Amazon. So I hope people will read it.
Everyone should check it out. It's How to End Hamas Barbarism is also part of it, but War Against the Jews. So Professor, part of the war against the Jews is happening domestically, and I just can't wait to get your thoughts on this. Thanks to Congresswoman Elise Stefanik's cross-examination, her questioning at the hearing on anti-Semitism, we have seen a historic eruption of donors and alumni holding MIT, Harvard, and Penn accountable. For those that don't know, we're getting the clip. Elise Stefanik asked a rather simple question about if somebody calls for the genocide of a group of people, does that go against Harvard's speech policy? And they said, well, it's context specific. Professor, what was your reaction when you saw that dialogue between Congresswoman Stefanik and the university presidents?
I wasn't at all surprised. President Gay has been the worst president in modern Harvard history. She has been in charge of making the school safe from conservatives, safe from opposing points of view. She's been totally opposed to free speech, due process, and civil liberties. And suddenly, on October 7th, she discovered the First Amendment. Ah, the First Amendment, it protects anti-Semites who want to commit genocide against Jews. It doesn't protect people who want to commit microaggressions against Blacks or against transgender people or against gays. No, no, no. They have no free speech. They can be prevented. Students have gotten admissions to Harvard rescinded because they said something that could offend an African-American. Lectures have been canceled. So when she testified under oath that Harvard is committed to free principle, she was not telling the truth.
Not at all. And also the lack of moral clarity on one of the easiest questions ever to answer. I mean, if you're in a leadership position and the word genocide comes up, that's not context specific. Now, Professor, I want to ask you, because I think you're uniquely positioned to help us navigate this. This last weekend, I spent time with some major supporters of Israel. And they're so troubled by what happened, obviously, on October 7th, as they should be. And they're equally as troubled as what's happening as the universities. And it was a dinner party. And one of these amazingly brilliant Jewish Americans said, it's time for us to prevent hate speech at Harvard, hate speech at Penn. Do you think that is the proper reaction, Professor? Because you can understand where they're coming from. Tell us your thoughts.
I don't think hate speech is definable. What is hate speech to you is love speech to somebody else. And I don't think we should be banning speech on college campuses. Let anybody say whatever they want and let it be answered in the marketplace of ideas. The problem with Harvard, Penn, MIT, and other places is, for example, I can't speak at Harvard in favor of the two-state solution for Israel. I was probably their most well-known professor when I retired 10 years ago. I have never been invited back to speak on Israel. I've tried. A small group invited me, but they made me speak off campus for fear that my physical safety would be affected. I can't speak at the college I went to, Brooklyn College. I can't speak at Yale Law School. Nobody wants to hear one side of the issue. They're all happy to hear the other side of the issue. So I'm not in favor of restrictions on free speech. I would rather have an open dialogue. But if you're going to have restrictions, they can't be applied unequally. You can't say that you can say things about Jews that you can't say about Blacks, or you can't hide it behind anti-Zionism. Oh, we're not anti-Semitic. We just think the only nation state of the Jewish people should off the face of the earth. Palestine should be free of Jews from the river to the sea. It should be cleaned of dirty Jews. No, that's unacceptable. But if you're going to have total free speech, I'm in favor of that. That's my first choice. But my second choice is, if you're going to have restrictions on free speech, it has to be applied equally. Harvard failed both of those tests.
So, Professor, let's take that one example, because I got in this debate the other day and I could see on both sides. I'm actually undecided. Is a protester on the street, you know, at Harvard saying from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, is that call for a genocide?
Well, I think that's the way many students would perceive it. I would perceive it that way. I think it does call for genocide, but I wouldn't ban it. I wouldn't ban it as long as you didn't ban anything else. The one thing that's intolerable is to rescind admissions because a student said something that might be interpreted negatively, or the president, the previous president of Harvard, 2-3 ago, Larry Summers, gets fired because he raised questions at a meeting about the possibility that gender may influence the ability in math and science. That's a debatable issue. For that, he gets fired, but Harvard says, no, we can't prosecute or fire or even discipline somebody who says, let's commit genocide against the Jews. It's the double standard that smells, and that she, President Gay, has been in charge of. Remember, she is a big advocate of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Diversity means only skin deep diversity. 3% of Harvard professors identify as conservatives. 3%, that's diversity. Equity is the opposite of equality. It's now a microaggression. If you quote Martin Luther King, I dream of a day when my children will be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And inclusion expressly excludes Jews. So that's been the reason for her rise. That's why she became the dean of the faculty. That's why she became the president of Harvard. She is tied together with the DEI, which has been the bane of intellectualism at universities. And not only should she have been fired and still should resign, but DEI has to be dismantled. It's destroying education. It's turning people against each other because it's all based on what's called intersectionality. There are only two groups in society, the oppressed and the oppressors. Jews, white people, Israel are the oppressors. Gay people, Palestinians are the oppressed. The oppressed can do no wrong. The oppressors can do no right. That's Harvard.
So then, Professor, just to get a little bit specific, but I want to make sure some understand, because some people, we get some emails or some people would say, but what about if Jewish students feel unsafe based on some of the protests or the chanting? Do we have to censor speech based on the feelings of a recipient? That's where it starts to get a little bit murky or unclear, right? Okay, no, please tell us. Yeah.
So I think when you come to college, when you come to law school, when you go to university, you have to develop a thick skin. I used to teach a seminar in which I told my students, if you want to feel good at the end of the class, there's a very good massage place down the block you can get. If you want your most sacred views to be challenged, if you want to go out of this class sweating and upset and concerned, this is my class. I don't think any idea should be safe. I don't think students should feel safe. They should feel safe from physical attacks, but not from attacks on their religion, on their politics, on their ideology, on anything else. Ideas are not safe at universities. No student has the right to be safe. So chant all you want. Just don't intimidate and don't hassle people and don't push them to the floor as what happened at Harvard. And don't block them from entering classes and don't show to other people up. For example, the National Lawyers Guild, all over the country, it has law school branches all over the country. Its goal is to silence conservative speakers. It shouts them down. That's wrong. But you can't have a rule that applies only to some groups and not to other groups. That's been the biggest failing that Harvard has had. And that's the biggest failing of the women's movement today. The women's movement today says, me too, except if you're a Jew. Me too, believe women, except if you're an Israeli. The almost no feminist groups have spoken up today against the rapes, the mutilations, the sexual assaults that not only occurred, but probably are still occurring among the hostages. You can't get it because in today's world, it's all left or right. If it's left, it has to be right. And if it's right, it has to be wrong. And that's what universities have become. And President Gay is the symbol of all that. And that's why it was so important for the future of Harvard for her to be replaced. But it hasn't happened. And Harvard will continue to sink down. Harvard ranked last among every university on free speech. And she has the chutzpah to get up in front of Congress and under oath say, we at Harvard believe in free expression. No, you don't. You believe in censorship, cancel culture, wokeness, and progressive repression. That's what you believe in. That's what Harvard has come to stand for.
That's important. The reputation for Harvard graduates means a lot. Do you really see in elite society how people view Harvard is changing in real time?
Well, I hope not about the students. The students are great. I'm not sure that students come out of Harvard with a lot more knowledge than they went in. The most important part of Harvard is the admissions process. We take very smart people, and hopefully we turn them out a little smarter. I'm not so sure about the latter. The educational process is broken down. What was it, 90-something percent of all students now at Harvard and Yale get A's in every course? I mean, when I went to law school, C was the average grade. You had to struggle for a B, and you were, if you got an A, my God, you were a genius. But today, everybody gets an A. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets a trophy up. And so the educational value of a Harvard degree has been substantially diminished over time, not so much in STEM, not so much in science, technology, engineering, and math, but very much so in political science, history. Yep. A lot of those courses are propaganda, not learning.
All right, I want to tell you about Herzog. Herzog Foundation is amazing. I want you guys to check it out right now. We've been talking about how our nation's public schools have been captured by progressive ideologues teaching things that directly contradict the values of millions of American families. For those of you worried about the best educational path for your kids and grandkids, I'm pleased to announce our new partnership with the folks at the Herzog Foundation. They are the trusted source of American K-12 private education with a remarkable suite of resources for parents and grandparents. From their online publication, The Lion, to the new podcast, Making the Leap, Herzog Foundation offers a wide range of advice and information for Christian parents. To learn more about how your family and faith and community can flourish through a quality Christian education, go to herzogfoundation.com. That is herzogfoundation.com. Herzogfoundation.com. H-E-R-Z-O-G. Herzogfoundation.com. Professor, it's impressive that you've been able to write this book, War Against the Jews, How to End Hamas's Barbarism. Walk our audience through, how do we end the barbarism of Hamas? And do you think we are getting closer to that end day by day as the IDF goes through Gaza?
Well, it's very difficult. Just today, 10 Israeli soldiers, including a commander, was killed because Israel chose not to bomb because they didn't want to kill civilians. And yet they're accused of genocide by people on the extreme left. Israel takes more concern for not killing civilians than anybody else, even putting their own soldiers at risk. 10 of them died today who could have been saved if they had just dropped a bomb on the building instead of going in and getting ambushed. So I don't know whether we're closer or not. I hope President Biden doesn't start putting restrictions on Israel, because the only way to end the barbarity is the way we ended the barbarity in Germany and Japan. Total victory, unconditional surrender, and then the people will realize that Israel is strong and can help rebuild the way we rebuilt Germany and Japan. And maybe we can have peace in the Middle East. But if there is a ceasefire, which is a unilateral surrender, which many in the Democratic Party have called for, that will be simply an invitation for Hamas to read the label on your shampoo, which says, wash, rinse, repeat, wash, rinse, repeat. That's what Hamas has been doing for 25 years. They've been killing Jews, then hoping that the Jews will respond, Israel will respond. They hide their soldiers, they hide their rockets, they hide their tunnels behind civilians. Israel responds, civilians die. Hamas holds the children up in front of television, and it's called the dead baby strategy. Hamas knows how to use it, and they'll use it again and again. They've told us they're going to use it again and again, unless they're as destroyed as the Nazis were destroyed in 1945.
So then, let's say in the next month or two, eventually they're going to run out of oxygen and fuel, power and food in these tunnels. let's say Hamas does have some form of a surrender and there are thousands or tens of thousands of prisoners. I know this is the $1 trillion question. It is easy to explain, but difficult to solve. How do we solve this? What is to be made of the nearly 2 million civilians of Gaza? Because the PA has shown time and time again, they're incapable of self-government.
And of the 2 million people in Gaza, some 70% supported the atrocities.
That's right.
It's not going to be easy. It has to be done by force and intimidation, not by compromise. Every time Israel is compromised and withdrawn, it has ended up getting victimized again. There has to be total and complete victory with an assurance that it will happen again and again, that Israel will simply not tolerate rockets. My cousin is the chief rabbi of Sderot. They get, 20 rockets a day? He buried 9 of his congregants after October 7th. That just cannot be allowed to exist. We're not talking about occupied territory here. We're talking about the heart and soul of Israel, the kibbutzim, that have been part of Israel since 1948. There's no occupied territory there. And Gaza could have been Singapore and the Mediterranean. The occupation ended 2005, 2006, 2007. Hamas took over in a bloody coup and turned it into what it is today. Israel had no responsibility for that. You know, they say it's an open-air prison. If it's an open-air prison, the guards are Hamas. The people may be limiting access to the prison are Israelis to make sure there's no breakout. But the people responsible for the conditions in Gaza are Hamas. And the best favor Israel could do to the 2 million residents of Gaza is to destroy Hamas. And then perhaps it will democratically elect leaders who will want to do what happened in Germany. Rebuild the country, the Marshall Plan, Japan, rebuild the country.
This is the issue. And Professor, you hit on it. What is Hamas? Is Hamas the fighting age males in the tunnels? Or is Hamas 70% of the people in Gaza? That's the question.
It's 70% of the people in Gaza now, but that can change. It was 70% of the people in Nazi Germany were Nazis and voted for Nazis and would supported Hitler. But that changed, and it can change. The hearts and minds of people can be changed, but in this case, only by force, total victory, and total surrender. That's the only alternative. Then you can move toward a two-state solution or other solutions that will allow people to live in peace. But with Hamas in existence, there can be no peace.
Congratulations to your book, War Against the Jews, How to End Hamas Barbarism. Hamas in Hebrew means violence, discord. So it's the perfect title for that evil group of people. Professor, great job. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
The following is a paid advertisement sponsored by Versus AI. Salem is not an investment advisor, and this is not a solicitation or recommendation by Salem to buy or sell any securities. Salem and Dr. Gorka are being paid $85,000 to carry this ad on its radio and podcast network. Salem does not endorse any investment product, and you should check with your personal financial advisor before investing.
Greetings, I'm Dr. Sebastian Gorka, and I'm excited to share with you a groundbreaking opportunity in the artificial intelligence industry that stands resilient amidst the Sam Altman upheavals. Enter Versus AI and its pioneering Genius platform. The AI sector has been largely dominated by large language models like those at OpenAI. Versus AI is charting a new course. Don't miss this potential breakout company. Be part of the AI revolution. Versus AI, with its commitment to innovative solutions, is poised to remain a leader in the dynamic world of artificial intelligence. As AI becomes increasingly central to our future, the potential of Genius's platform to enhance your investment portfolio is immense. We invite you to be part of this exciting journey. Discover the power of Genius at emcversus.com.